Good day, everyone. Welcome to the CSU Relentless Gardener podcast. I am Colorado State University horticultural specialist Linda Langelo, and joining me today is Colorado Master Gardener Carol Martin from Jefferson County. Now, let's get to the heart of it, where we explore the horticultural topic of converting turf in the front yard. Hello, Carol. How are you?
I'm great, Linda. Nice to be here.
Glad you can be here. So tell me how you would convince a homeowner to decide to take up their beautiful turf from their front yard. And you're laughing. Okay.
I'm laughing because, you know, it is a hard sell for many people. I think many of us just have this good feeling about having a beautiful front yard. It's something we probably grew up with, depending where we grew up. But I know that was true for me. I grew up in Iowa, you know, a lot of rainfall in Iowa, typically. And so I think that's the key thing that I think we need to think about as Coloradans. You know, what really makes sense as we kind of move into this time when water is even scarcer than ever. And so to me, that's the real important part of thinking about your own environment that you create in your front yard. And I talked specifically about the front yard because to me, that is a little easier sell in a lot of ways because we don't use our front yards in quite the same way that we typically use our back. So the front yard is what we, you know, put out to the front, to the world, if you will, but it's also a place that we can kind of make into a showcase for Colorado plants and make it more of a Coloradoscape rather than focused on, you know, honestly, Kentucky bluegrass, which you think about, you know, what is the annual rainfall in Colorado? What about 10 to 15 inches, typically, some years way worse. But in Kentucky, where Kentucky bluegrass comes from and is what most of our lawns are, you know, they get something like 45 inches. So more than three times typically what we get. So Colorado, you know, just doesn't make sense with that type of turf. So those are the kinds of things that I talk to people about when they ask me, you know, what is this zero scaping rather than zero scaping? Right. And they don't want to turn their yards into, you know, a rock landscape. Right.
Which attracts more heat and then you get weeds and you get issues. But what would you say to the person that says, well, I want a buffalo grass front lawn?
Well, honestly, you know, if they want to try that, I would say try it small because they may find that isn't going to give them what they want. And see, that's the other thing that I try to start with is what is it they really use their front lawn for? A lot of times people will say, well, my kids play there. Do they? Research kind of shows that most lawns are not used very much. People use parks for soccer, those things, and kids may play on the lawn from time to time. But I think it's good to really analyze, you know, what is it you want to use that space for? And how can you do that in a way that is less water intensive and truly gives you enjoyment? You know, it may be that you want to have a portion of your yard in buffalo grass. I like to encourage people to start small. If they're feeling like this isn't for them or, you know, they just aren't confident, I say start small with just a small patch and see how that works for you. Yeah. The same thing with, you know, maybe trying some perennial flowers. They can be so beautiful and honestly quite easy to grow. Way less management involved than keeping, you know, a yard looking green and lush.
Yeah. Well, I say buffalo because that is sort of a more low maintenance. But yes, it takes a long time to really get down to where you have no weed seeds, and that's some maintenance. You don't need to fertilize it. And, you know, I've had clients in our area who have converted their front lawns, but, you know, it's taken about 3 years before they get it looking exactly the way they want it. And then it's gorgeous and it's really
fun. Right.
And then a lot of times people do it at the wrong time of the year. They jump the gun and they do it too early. And it needs that warm temperatures of June, July, and to the middle of August. And so, but a front yard in and of itself is a welcome mat to your house. So you really should think about how that blends in to the architecture and the way that your house, you know, whatever color you pick for your house, whether it's plain white or it's like a baby blue or whatever, you know, it should really stand out because, you know, you want that curb appeal.
Absolutely. And that is where I think more and more Coloradans are wanting a landscape that really reflects where they live. And so that means not just grasses, you know, you can have a portion. A lot of my friends have converted, you know, like half of their yard or maybe the front part and made that into perennial flowers or some ground cover mixed in with native grasses. And it's gorgeous. It looks way more inviting than just plain lawn. And so I think that's, I like what you're saying about, it's like that welcome mat and you really want it to be something inviting. One of the things, because over the last couple of years, I've converted my front lawn to be entirely native plants. Mm-hmm. And what was so amazing to me was how many more neighbors I actually met and had conversations with, because I'm out there working in my garden and they'll be curious, like, what's that plant? And how did you decide to remove your turf? And it's a great conversation starter, if nothing else.
I had the same experience. I live in a small town. And so there's medians. There's a sidewalk and then there's medians to the curb. And those medians are about, oh, I guess 40 feet long by 10 feet wide. And to water them with grass, Kentucky bluegrass, was horrendous. And so I ripped them out and I did natives and plant select plants. And there is something blooming all the time. And I meet different people in town and they say, oh, we drove by the other day. And what's that orange flower? That's, yeah. So I get that. It's a, just a nice thing to have something always in bloom when it's in season and to extend that season for as long as you can. And then absolutely. I don't really have that much maintenance on it. Yeah, if it's really long drought, I will water it, but it's not like every week or every 4 days. I couldn't see wasting that much water.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just not the right environment for a grass because of that heat that generates from the sidewalk and the street. And yeah, that's another thing that I'll recommend to people is, you know, try to that area of your yard that just always seems to cause you problems. Think about how that might work better. It might be because of shade. It might be because of too much sun, might be the heat from the driveway that is just frying whatever you've put there. And so really look for what is that situation and how might you be able to solve it with a more drought tolerant, you know, solution, whether that's a dry loving grass or even some of the flowers just love dry areas, you know? So,
right. Yeah. Like primrose, I have it on a corner and it's a happy, It just,
it's a happy camper.
Yeah, it just spreads, and it's this mass of yellow that comes
yeah.
out. So, but
no, that's great.
What are some other ideas that you would suggest to remove the turf and convert your front yard? How about vegetable gardens?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that I've seen a lot and people have been very successful is mixing vegetables in, even if they have other plants already growing. But if they've got just that turf area, I've seen people put in raised beds, and that's kind of nice because they're a little bit more decorative depending on what you use, what material. There are some beautiful ones. If you've got a more rustic look, you can use kind of one of those old watering troughs. You know, it can be anything that you choose, but to elevate that, it really is helpful because it's easier to work. You know, you don't have to bend over so far. You can keep it separate. You can often keep critters out a little more easily with a raised bed. And I think that's a really great way to start, because it's a small kind of contained space that you can be successful with. Because I think that's the thing. You want to be successful with that first effort, because then that might encourage you to say, well, this worked well. I'm going to try this in another area.
Right, right. And it matches the design of your place. And the more creative people get, you know, that just inspires other people.
Absolutely. And the same thing, if you don't even want to go that big, just adding some containers can be a good way to go. The one downside with containers is that they do require a little more attention because they dry out faster. But again, if you put some grasses in there, they can be extremely tolerant. If you go with a blue grama or something like that, they can be very tolerant of a lack of water.
Right, right. And raised beds too will eat up sooner and dry out faster. But, you know, you can have irrigation connected to your raised beds. And it's a great place actually to grow potatoes because you don't get critters and blight that mm-hmm. is waiting in the soil for those potatoes. So,
yeah.
I mean, if a person is interested in growing them anyway, so.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think anytime you can add edibles, you know, whether it's, you know, some herbs or something like that, or vegetables, I think that's really a great way to go.
Well, vegetables mixed in with flowers, I believe, increases pollinators.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's another argument in terms of removing turf that does resonate with a lot of people. And that is this idea that if you think about our lawns in terms of pollinators, they're kind of, if it's a Kentucky bluegrass lawn, it's a desert for pollinators. There's nothing for them there. And so adding even just a few perennials, that can be a lovely way to bring more life to your garden, because the bees and the other pollinators like that, and birds, and I've seen so many hummingbirds, and butterflies are wonderful pollinators that will be attracted into your garden if you have, you know, some nice, beautiful perennials for them.
Right. My last podcast was on ground cover, so attracting flowering ground covers is a good way to attract more pollinators. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. And it's a way to keep out the weeds.
And reduce, you know, mulch. Reduce mulch.
Yeah.
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 Keep the soil cool.
Keep it cool. Absolutely.
So with that said, do you recommend replacing grass with artificial turf?
I think you probably already know my answer, which is in general, no. But before giving a quick no to someone, I would always try to dig into, well, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? And it's almost always I am so sick of taking care of my lawn, you know, that it just, they feel like artificial turf just sounds like a good idea, that they won't have to do a thing. And of course, if you've ever walked by an artificial turf lawn that's been there a while, you'll see that weeds are growing out of it. If you don't get too close, you might not notice this, but they can develop a bad odor if pets or, you know, dogs in the neighborhood pee on it. It really can become quite unpleasant. The other thing is it even magnifies the whole heat island kind of issue, because it just doesn't have any way to ventilate. It's like there's this rug on your, you know, your soil. And so it's got a lot of challenges to it. And I think when people are looking for an easy fix to a problem area in their lawn, that is not going to be a great solution.
There are no easy fixes. There are no easy fixes. Yeah.
I think that's the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah. And in one of the counties I go to and cover for clients, they put a soccer field in and they put artificial turf in. And Tony Koski, our CSU turf specialist, had done a presentation on the pros and cons, and they had put this turf in a very sunny location, particularly in the afternoon. So it heats up. You can't play on it. Mm-hmm. You know, if especially with soccer, you fall, you slide, you whatever, you burn yourself. The temperature is amazing. And then it's keeping it clean, as you said. And that's a whole lot of expensive maintenance.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've seen reports, and it sounds like this is a similar thing where kids have actually gotten burned on artificial turf. Yes. So, you know, it's something you just really want to do your research before, you know, before pursuing that avenue.
Yeah. Tell the listening audience what steps you would take to start to convert the turf.
Yeah, I think the key for me is always to start with, you know, what are your goals? What is it you want? Are you wanting to maybe spiff up your yard area and make it look more inviting to people? Are you wanting to attract pollinators? Are you wanting to just do something that's more ecologically appropriate? You know, really think about what your goal is and your motivation. To me, that's the most important thing, to be really clear about that. Then you need to kind of get down to, well, what do I have? So make a map of your yard and then start to think about, well, where might flowers do best? Where would they attract the eye of someone driving by? Where would they attract pollinators? You know, be thinking about that, but really think about what you already have. Do you have any existing mature trees that you need to make sure to support? Because that's one thing I want to, just a little side comment. Sometimes when people start going drought tolerant, they forget that they've got a tree in that yard that needs to get water. And sometimes in Colorado, our trees don't get enough water just from the sky. So you've got to really take those mature trees into consideration. What I've personally done and what I recommend to people is, if you want the rest of your yard to be pretty drought tolerant, just have a temporary hose system that you can put in for those times when we have long periods of drought where that tree really needs some supplemental water. But don't forget about them, or they're going to suffer.
Or pay attention to similar plants that take the same similar water needs or water requirements. Of course, that's not going to be in the same ballpark as any tree, but as they take so much more, but it's in that same
thing. That's Absolutely. That's a really good way to look at it. So map that out. You know, you might want to, if you're going to be planting a lot of new things, get a soil test done. It's not always necessary. If you've got a very healthy lawn growing, you're probably going to be fine. One way that sometimes people test, and it just, this is very informal, but just dig up, you know, a shovel full and see if there are worms in there and, you know, other kind of life that shows you that's pretty good, healthy soil. Then you you really need to think about the scale, and that's really how much are you wanting to do and how confident. Like when I did my yard, I did the whole thing. I just went whole hog, but I'm not sure I would recommend that to everybody. I think it's really wiser to do as we've suggested, you know, a little strip here, maybe a raised planting bed, something like that, so that you can have success and not overwhelm yourself.
Would you recommend that they spray Roundup or cover it with cardboard? Some people do different methods for killing the turf before. Some people are okay with the Roundup. Some people want to do cardboard. Put it down in the fall and cover it, you know.
If you're a big planner, I think doing either the what they call so-called lasagna method or sheet composting method, that's where, like you said, you lay down either cardboard or newspaper, if you have that, and then cover it with mulch to keep it in place. But that does take months. I mean, probably starting in the fall and it'll be ready by spring. What I ended up doing was using a sod cutter. And if you're doing a large area, that makes sense. I've known other people who shoveled it out. I personally would not want to use that because it's very backbreaking work. but the sod cutter was great. And what I ended up doing was flipping the sod. I don't know if you've heard of people doing that, but it's a great method because it keeps, I mean, that topsoil that is attached to your lawn is probably some of the richest soil. And so you flip that over and you get to conserve that soil and all of the bugs and, you know, things that are in there, the worms, et cetera. And then as the season goes on, that grass will decompose. I personally have had very little grass regrow from that. And so I found it to be a great method. And then I just covered that with, I started planting. I also covered it with mulch. I use pea gravel, but you could use bark if that was more to your aesthetic sense. Right. You have to be a little careful with bark mulch with natives because it sometimes holds too much moisture right at the surface. And so you just have to make sure you kind of pull back the mulch around the crown of the plant to give it plenty of air.
Right. And I would mention to folks that, you know, they could do the mason jar. It doesn't have to be a mason jar, but they call it the mason jar soil test. If they want to know what their structure is. Not, it won't tell you anything else, but it will tell you the structure.
Yeah. Because you do, I mean, especially if you've got a lawn that's been struggling, you probably, you know, could have some compaction, you know, you could have all sorts of different things going on. And so, yeah, doing a simple test like that, or even, you know, having it analyzed by a lab, either through the Extension Service or some other mechanism, you might want to go that route.
Well, soil's where it all starts. So if it is compacted, there are plants that like compacted soil. So, you know,
that's true. And, you know, another common question I get is, you know, let's say someone says, okay, I'm going full hog. I want to do the whole thing. You know, should I rototill? And I always discourage that because it's it's kind of what they've discovered with a lot of farming techniques is that you really don't want to disturb the soil more than necessary. You know, kind of that no-till approach is often much more beneficial for all of the things that are going on, all the different bug life and fungi and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else that you would, you know, what I would add to that is that really study the plants, really, really study them, and then go call nurseries or greenhouses and go out and look at that plant in person, because, you know, pictures are pretty and everything, but does it really appeal to you when you see it in a nursery? Or you, oh, I didn't think it had those kinds of leaves, or I, you know, this looks a little different, you know, and a lot of times greenhouses and nurseries sell things when they are in full bloom, because that's the way they have to, because who's going to buy a plant that they, well, how does this flower, you know, it's a ground cover and all they see are a foliage. And so that might not look attractive to 90% of their clientele, but if it's in flower and it has a pretty flower, they'll buy it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the other thing that I recommend, if you can, is try to see them. I mean, the nursery is great, but as you said, they're in prime shape and they may not look like that for very long or in your environment. And so I always recommend try, if you can, go look at some demonstration gardens. I know, you know, Jefferson County and many of the other extension offices have demonstration gardens for plant select, for natural or native plants. And you can go in and see them at various times of year. Other places, I'm thinking in our area anyway, on the Front Range, there's Denver Botanic Garden, and they have Chatfield, which is more of a farm setting. They have the Plains Conservation Center, which is more of that plains kind of environment. Hudson Gardens. I mean, I'm just naming off a few that come to mind. But I think those are great things to look at too, because you start to see them in their actual growing environment.
Well, and that's important. I mean, those are good suggestions, because, you know, like you said, each one has its own environment that it's in, and that's important. If they want that look and they like that look, then they understand, you know, what it's going to do at their house. And
exactly. I don't know if we have enough time for this, but there are a couple other resources that I just love to mention, because you know, another thing that can kind of encourage people to get started with this is that many water districts are offering rebates for people to remove some of their sod. And so I would encourage people to check with their local water district to see if they have anything like that going on. There's a place they can also go to get help with that, and that's called Resource Central. Is that a resource you're familiar with, Linda? I don't know if it's in Boulder.
We don't have that on the plains. No.
Okay. All right.
It's not happening here. People are converting, and they are just not. They're doing it on their own.
On their own, yeah. And a lot of people are self-motivated, but I know, you know, if you are in an area, I'm thinking of Resource Central. It's located in Boulder, but they work with water districts all over the Denver metro area. So for people who are in the Denver metro area, check in with them, because I looked at a couple of different water districts and all of them were offering up to a $500 rebate, which, you know, that's not insignificant. And that helps cover the cost of sod removal or, you know, whatever expense they're incurring. So that's one thing to check into. And they do have all sorts of other things that they have, their own sod removal service that they'll offer. And then they have something called Garden in a Box, which, as the name implies, it makes it really easy. You know, they'll say like, this is for shade, or this is if you want to focus on Colorado natives. So those are some things to be aware of. And then if you want to learn more about Colorado native plants, the Colorado Native Plant Society is an incredible resource, and they have plants recommendations for all the different climates and zones within Colorado. So that's one that I would go to online, and you know, you can just get recommendations for plants, and they often have photographs taken of the plants in their native setting. And that I think is really helpful.
And you can also email them and ask a question, and they will answer you.
Nice. That's always great when they actually answer, right?
So for Resource Central, is there a website, or can people just type in their browser Resource Central?
I think if you just go to type in Resource Central, if that doesn't bring it up, put in Boulder, because they actually have in Boulder, they have an actual place where people can recycle materials and all sorts of stuff. So I'm sure it would come up if you did that.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's good to know. Thanks for those resources.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And of course, I hope it goes without saying that CU Extension, you know, websites, there are so many good resources there for people who do want to become more, less turf-centric and more, you know, native grasses and plants, and tons of plant lists and things like that. So I would encourage people to, if they want to get started with this, that's a great place to start.
Well, I'm doing a podcast in a couple of weeks with Darren Davidson on a new program that CSU is putting out. So it's also a good way to learn how to sustain your landscape.
Oh, nice. Yes. Oh, I can't wait. So I can't wait to hear that one.
They're rolling out that as it's in like phase one, but they're rolling out that program. So that's just a little teaser for folks.
Yeah. Terrific.
But no. I know this isn't scientific by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, I tell people, if you're attracted to a plant, that's your intuition at work. You know, if you're really,
I
have to, you know, that's a to die for thing that I absolutely have to have, then there's some reason you have to have it.
Yeah. And listen to those feelings. Absolutely. Yeah.
Instead of buying, oh, my neighbor has, I like that plant. And you bring it home and it doesn't do well, or it dies. And then there's all kinds of other things too. There's the soil, there's the history of how it was taken care of before it got to you, and so forth, you know, but usually, you know, intuition can be so strong sometimes that for whatever reason, you need that plant.
Yeah. Gotta have it. Yeah, that's great.
Anything else you'd recommend to people about converting their turf?
You know, I would honestly, I guess, just say, give it a try. Start small if that makes you nervous. And just remember that it is going to take some time. And, you know, you said about the buffalo grass taking about 3 years. I think that's a good kind of rule of thumb to think about. Something we often say about perennials, you know, is that they might not look good in that first year, because what they're doing is establishing that root system, you know, and we even have that sleep for the first year, creep the second year, and leap the third year. Now, some perennials will leap during that first year. Like, that's one reason I love black-eyed Susans, because they just, boom, they're performing that first year. But not all perennials are like that, because what they're doing is that root system, and it does take all of their energy, or most of their energy. And so a lot's not happening above ground for you to see. And you might think, oh, this plant's a dud, but it isn't necessarily. It probably isn't. You need to give it that you know, that care for the first year, especially giving it, you know, watering it regularly. It might be drought tolerant, but it needs those roots established before it can be drought tolerant.
You mentioned a good point with roots. You know, you go into the nursery and you find a plant and you should pick it up or try to kind of gently take it out of its pot and see how the roots are. You know, are they healthy? Are they compacted in there? Because you're already buying a stressed plant if they're compacted.
Yeah.
Or they have damaged roots. And so just pay attention. Are the roots coming out of the pot? Or you can't get the plant out of the pot because they're so tight in there because they're getting less nutrients and soil for X amount of time before you get that plant. And then of course you're, you know, trying to break out apart that root and prune some of that back and putting it in the ground. And that's another stressor on top of it. So I just like to remind people, take a good look at the root system.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, give it that extra care the first year. I'll just say with my big project, you know, I put in 60 plants the first year. So there was no way I wanted to hand water all of those plants. So I put in a temporary drip system that I will probably be able to take out some of it this year and in future years, just take out the whole thing. Because eventually, you know, my goal is for those plants to all be water self-sufficient. But that first year is so critical. So having a drip system in place just means that, you know, you can give it that regular water that it's going to need to create that strong root system.
It's kind of like a high and dry garden. We have one here in Akron, and there's others on the Western Slope, and there's some in the Boulder area, Denver area. And, you know, those plants are watered by Mother Nature's precipitation, whether it's snow or rain. And those are some of the gardens that people should also look at if they really want to go to the extreme, really, for drought-tolerant plants. And tolerance is the key. You know, how much time is it, 10 days, 14 days? Out here for an extended drought, it's 10 to 14 days is what they consider with high temperatures.
Yeah, yeah. And that takes a very tough plant.
Yes, it does. But there are a lot of them.
There are. Absolutely. And I think those are the ones that we want to really, you know, focus on. But, you know, that's not to say that you can't also, you know, add some things in that maybe that's that plant that's calling you and it needs a little more help. And, you know, you can just hand water some of those from time to time.
Well, if it's calling you, it probably won't need help. My experience, sorry. But you know, you can put in annuals. You can put in, you know, annual poppies if you want, or something. It's all about, like you were saying, it's all about what kind of landscape do you want?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be an all or nothing thing. It's just, you know, mixed bag with lots of diversity is probably the best thing. And that's probably what one of Darren Davidson's points will be, is diversity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're actually rebuilding our landscapes on everybody's plot of land and helping our pollinators, because we've interrupted all that space, you know, filled it with concrete.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and I personally love that thought of the space that I'm creating is kind of this little oasis, you know, for pollinators.
Right. Right.
And if we can just connect all of those, that will make such a healthier environment for all of us.
However, turf does give oxygen.
Yeah, And don't get me wrong, I love turf, you know, it's just, like I said, let's diversity, let's end with that, right?
Yes.
Diversity is what it's about. Yeah, I do not want to be labeled as a turf hater. I love a good turf.
No, we won't do that. We won't do that. No, that's all right. No. Yeah, this is, you know, it is with the water attempting to conserve it. And, you know, I'm sure everybody's water bill, utility bills are increasing. So you want to do what you can to lower that cost and to help contribute to the environment, you know, if you're conscious of that, and still keep a wonderfully beautiful landscape at the same time, that is your preference. And like I said, it's not an all or nothing deal.
That's right, Linda. Absolutely.
Personal taste, you know?
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the resource information. I hope people go to the Resource Central and learn about
yeah.
In a Box. And I hope they go and visit some of these places, Chatfield and Denver Botanic and the Water Conservation Districts and Plant Select Gardens all over.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, Plant Select. I mean, we haven't focused on that, but that's just an incredible resource that we all have, you know, online or visiting, you know, a Plant Select demonstration garden. It's right. Amazing, all right. Those different plants and all the hard work that's done to create them.
Because those are tried and true.
Absolutely.
You know, they've been trialed, they're sent out to us. And we are surveyed as to what overwinters, what doesn't overwinter. So it's a great, great resource.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes I know just finding, you know, a particular plant or shrub or whatever it is, that their website is organized so beautifully that you can, you know, you can really search and narrow down, because I think for many homeowners, they're just overwhelmed. You know, they go into a nursery and they don't even know where to start. And Plant Select is a great way to start to narrow down, so you have some plants in mind. And then when you go to the nursery, if let's say you don't see that plant, you can even ask them, well, I'd like something like this, you know, I think this would do well in my space. And so that's a wonderful just tool that you can use to kind of narrow down what it is you're looking for.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. A great program. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. Yes. Yes. Well, thank you. This has been
all right.
Great.
Thank you so much, Linda. This was fun. And I love your podcast.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Okay.
A thank you to the audience for listening. Tune in next time when we get to the heart of the matter on another horticultural topic.